When I asked the planning committee for this conference last fall to allow me to make this presentation on religious freedom in the workplace, I will confess to you that I really didn't know much about this area. You know, I tried a couple of religious discrimination cases at an earlier point in time, but I hadn't really kept track of the development of the law. But I do work for the city of Austin, and we had recently received a couple of lawsuits that were filed by religious organizations and other businesses that attacked our local employment non-discrimination ordinance in Austin, which includes sexual orientation and gender identity as protected classes under our ordinance. And the basis of those lawsuits was that our ordinance did not provide a specific exemption for organizations, religious or otherwise, whose religious values did not include appreciation for either transitioning status or for same-sex relationships. So those were the basis of the lawsuits. I was not the lead counsel on it. Paul Matula, my colleague, was lead counsel on that. I did a little bit of research on it, though, because the issue interested me. And what I found is there's been a tremendous amount of development, both statutory and case law, around issues involving religion in the workplace, particularly over the last, say, quarter century. And I needed to get myself up to speed on that. Probably the most prominent legal scholar in the United States on the topic of religion and the religious freedom is Douglas Laycock, formerly a UT law professor, now at UVA Law School. And his estimate is that there are at least 2,000 state and federal laws in the United States that either grant rights or grant exemptions based upon religion. So a tremendous amount of statutory laws developed around this topic, largely over the last quarter century. And by my count anyway, since 1990, there have been 12 United States Supreme Court cases, all on the merits, dealing with issues of religion in public life. Now, to be fair, most of these have more to do with public accommodation issues. That's where we get, say, the Masterpiece Cake Shop case out of the Supreme Court from Colorado. That's where we get the Hobby Lobby case. But a lot of these cases also deal with employment issues. And I think as employment law practitioners, it's important for us to recognize that so many of the cases, even though they may not involve direct disputes between employers and employees, they do involve issues that touch and concern in a very deep and profound way workplace relationships and life in the workplace. So I think there's value for us in kind of understanding how this law works and how the various statutes and principles fit together. So with that, let me just say that I put up some information about EEOC religious discrimination charges filed, and the point of this slide is simply to demonstrate that most of the real kind of growth and development in the law in this area is not strictly on the EEOC charge front. You do see here a pattern of the EEOC discrimination charges that has generally increased over the last 20 years. But the overall percentage of EEOC charges filed that are religious discrimination or failure to accommodate charges has remained relatively static over the last 20 years, somewhere between about 2.9% of all charges and 3.9 or 4% at a high watermark of all charges. So not a huge volume of EEOC charges sort of by percentage. And that's kind of held steady over the years. But the real development has been in other areas of the law that we're going to talk about. So to help my own understanding and maybe to kind of guide us through the next few minutes of this discussion, I've created this handy-dandy chart, this kind of three-sided triangular chart that sort of explains in visual terms, as a visual aid, how the laws protecting religion in the workplace fit together. The foundation of everything that we're going to talk about today is the First Amendment religion clauses. And that's basically the following statement, which is part of the First Amendment. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Okay? That's it. And constitutional scholars have parsed that statement into basically two separate ideas, two separate clauses or parts of the religion clauses, the free exercise part, which basically means that the government is not going to take action that would impair the free exercise of an individual's religion, and the establishment clause that prohibits the government from either favoring or disfavoring a particular religion or from, in effect, sponsoring a state religion. And those 16 words in the religion clauses have, of course, had an extremely profound effect upon the evolution of our culture and our society in the United States since our earliest days. More than one commentator I've read has made the statement that the United States is the most religiously diverse nation in the world. It's kind of hard to argue with that when you look across our society. And there's no doubt in my mind that the religion clauses in the First Amendment are a primary reason why we enjoy such a rich diversity of religious experiences in our country.